Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
She's been bringing an inner smile to your face for decades, and this year it's business as usual. Her new album, Texas and Spooner Oldham, The Muscle Shoals Sessions, is out on Friday, and she's about to go on tour. So let me say what you want. It's super Charlene Spiteri.
I was just waiting for him to go, The Muscle Soul. I like, can't say that word drink, can you? The yes. Muscle Shoals Sessions.
Yes. Yeah, baby.
She shall, on a she-shaw.
Shoe Shine Susie, sitting in the shoe shine shop. With all day
Charlie
long, she sits and sits all day long. She sits and shines.
There's somebody sitting in the control room going, oh my God, the sibilance on this mic is insane.
I know. How are you, Charlene?
I'm good, my dear.
Congratulations, by the way. Again, the Muscle Shoals Sessions.
I nearly said, what for?
For people who don't know, right, what is this album? How did it come about? Why is it so special? Where was it recorded?
Okay, so basically, we have made an album. We went to Alabama, to Muscle Shoals, and to the famous Fame Studios to record with the amazing Spooner Oldham. Spooner Oldham is he's a wonderful musician. You would probably know him from, he played on the first four Aretha Franklin records. He played on When a Man Loves a Woman at the age of 14, the organ on that. He basically, I mean, he's insane. He played on Liberace records. It's like insane.
No,
it's insane. It's insane. And he's the most humble, beautiful human being you will ever meet. It's pretty insane.
What was it like being near someone who was near all those other people in the past?
Do you know what? He's just like, he's just, you know, he's 80 years old now, Spooner. And we turn up, we'd never physically met. We'd spoke on the phone before we went. And basically what happened was Kenny Gates, who's the owner of PS Records, our record company boss, said he has this baby that he has, he's certain artists within the label do this piano record. He asked us maybe like about 5 years, 6 years ago, and I was like, yeah, you know, I could make you a record on a piano in 2 hours, but if we do it, we need to do it really something different. So you have to do it with someone else. So some people do it with a classical pianist, some people with a jazz pianist. But basically, we says when we find the right person, we'll do it. And Russell, Marie and Arman, suddenly, there had been loads of names came up and we were like, nah. And then suddenly somebody went, Spooner Oldham. And we went, oh my God, Spooner Oldham, really?
Yeah.
And we thought, he'll never do it. And then we called him up and Spooner was like, yeah, I'd love to do it. And we were like, oh my God, we're going to Alabama.
All right, let's have a little listen to Summer Sun, Spooner style.
Here comes the summer sun, he burns my skin, I ache again, I'm over you.
You know, again, goosebumps for me. What's it like for you listening to this?
Just sounds like me. Do you know what?
That's not true, because otherwise there'd have been no point in doing it.
The truth is, right, there was, so we, as you know, like last year we had the best of out, and basically we've released a best of on a best of, which is, I don't think anyone's done that before.
Yeah.
So what we thought was because we've made this record not chart eligible or anything, because we were like, God, are people really, and the reaction to this record has been really a bit insane. And I have to be honest, I'm a bit gobsmacked because, you know, we wanted it to be like more like a thank you. So we're like, you know, these are songs that we've done through the years. I mean, basically we've done from 89 right through to present day of the new songs.
Yeah.
And we were like, maybe you'll find something different, you know, because singing certain songs, like the version of Halo for me is the one that was like the most sort of, it was like, whoa, because, you know, Halo as a song was, it sounded a certain way and it's kind of like very rocky as the record, but this shows the gospel. So when we write the songs, this is how we hear them, because when we're, it's this raw, but suddenly you're hearing every single word and every little, like, breath and, you know, little me finding my way around Spooner, Spooner finding his way around me.
All right, let's have a listen to Halo.
She has a halo. We really do adore her. She has a halo. Can we touch her?
Can't bear it. I can't bear it. It's so good. Honestly. Because I think what's happening, this is me. You know me. I'm insane.
I know you.
Right.
I do know
so,
you.
Songs come from somewhere, yeah. Right? And we don't necessarily know where they come from. I think this is where they come from. I think that's why it's so special. I think we're hearing the birthplace of the song in the song because of the choir and because of the organ. I think that's the nest.
I think, yeah, the rawness, because that's the rawness of where I saw. Because the most important thing is what is written.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it's the songwriting that's the most important thing. And maybe people are going to see a different side of Texas because of the quality of the songwriting, hopefully. Yeah. And it's important, because the thing is when you hear a song, it's when I hear someone else's song, it's like the song reflects my life and the people I know and everything about it. And that's what we do with songs. We put our own people into the picture. And then the song touches us, and that's what makes it really special to us.
I mean, it is, you know, you get amazing producers, don't you?
Yeah.
And especially, you know, 80s and 90s, you know, there's wars of sound coming
totally.
Out. It's in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. But the seed of all that is the song, and this gets us back to there,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
If you start from here and then put all that stuff on it, you put the fairy dust on it, but in the weird way, we've gone the opposite way.
Deconstruction.
So we've basically deconstructed everything, and we're like, okay, well, we're showing you the essence of what the fairy dust is.
Yeah. But with a different kind of frame, because, you know, standalone they would be great, but there is a frame here, but it's a softer frame, it's a more ethereal frame. It's like an open sandwich in a New York deli.
Do you get an open sandwich in a New York
that's
deli?
That's all you get.
Is it an open sandwich?
They're called sandwiches, but you can't, there's no bread
yeah
anywhere.
But is it not? Is that an open sandwich? I don't even know what an open sandwich is. I thought an open sandwich was like one of those Swedish sandwiches.
See, I know we don't talk about Bryn, your hubby, much, right? But he does this with
food. He's crying today.
Why?
Of course he is. Wales went out. Oh, my God. He was in Cardiff last night.
I watched it in Welsh on S4C.
I heard.
The whole thing. But chefs often deconstruct things.
Yeah.
And it's a bit chefy.
Yeah, because sometimes you're given the space for the flavours to work, aren't you?
Yeah, totally.
Because it's like when you cover it all up, sometimes, you know, you're wanting the big impact first, and that's what the records do. You get that instant impact.
Sell, isn't it? It's a big sales pitch.
Yeah, you go, there's the massive impact. Yeah. But when you take it down this way, you go, oh, wait a minute, there's something different in this.
It's like a lithograph as opposed to like an
Look
oil
at us
painting.
It's getting very deep.
Well, deep and not deep. It's you know, you're doing to your songs here what Eric Clapton famously did with that first ever MTV Unplugged, and we know what happened after that. And Rod Stewart did it. It's your version of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, this could be your biggest selling album of all time. It really could. No, but it really could, though.
Do you think? I'm literally looking at you going like that. Oh my God, he's had too many coffees.
No, I've only had
7, 12.
But no, I'm serious. It's out on Friday. And the other thing,
it is.
There's so much I want to talk to you about to do with this. It's just lovely to have a big full-on conversation with you about something that we're both really excited about. On Friday, it's out on Friday, but I just thought I'd heard it before, and I haven't heard it before. I got the special encoded watermark link yesterday to listen to the whole album. But I just think I've heard a lot of
songs. Because you know
before.
The songs, there's a little bit of your psyche that's there that you've known them through
and
the
I've
years.
And I've seen you do them so many times, I suppose. And
exactly.
You know, on guitar, backstage, this kind of stuff. Maybe that's going on. So, but I convinced myself I'd heard this album before, and I hadn't. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't even heard it. I thought that's how it magically is, and in the air and around it, it is. But there are two songs I definitely could have couldn't have heard before because they're not Texas songs. So how did you decide which covers to put on? Because obviously myriad covers. You're with the main man Spooner. Mm-hmm. You know he's got all the covers in the world in his back pocket that he's played on.
Yeah, I mean it's insane.
So how did you decide for the two you chose?
We just kind of thought, yeah, let's, you know, Save the Last Dance. We were like
Drifters.
Yeah, we were like we love that song.
Yeah.
And it was great because when we recorded that, like Spooner did it with that kind of like sort of, he did that sort of Spanish-y kind of like sound, like Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid sound. And I, when we did it after, I thought it had that sort of Linda Ronstadt sort of thing going on, like Blue Bayou sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Spooner played on Linda Ronstadt records, so it was like, you know, it was that, and then we did the Would I Lie to
Charles
You,
and Eddie.
The Charles and Eddie cover, which was just a song that we love. Funnily enough, it was actually Kevin who does our radio promo. It was his first.
Kev, who's here?
Yeah, Kev, who's here. It was he worked on the original, and
no
it was his
way.
First gold disc, I think.
That's
yeah.
a bit serendipity there, yeah. Kev.
So back when we told him we were doing it, we said, oh, we're going to do this as the cover, and he went, oh my God, I worked on that record.
Have I heard you sing that before? Have you done
never,
that?
I've never done it before.
See, I'm convinced. I mean, we're playing it all the time because it's on the playlist. We love it so much. So we'll play that at the end of our chat anyway in full.
Yeah.
But here's a little bit of Save the Last Dance. Once again, we're talking to Charlene Spiteri about Texas and Spooner Oldham, the Muscle Shoals sessions out this Friday. Honestly, 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 if you haven't downloaded or bought an album for ages, maybe you want to consider dipping your toe back into the water by this one. It's so good. Also, Charlene's taking this some of these numbers on tour. Tix, T-I-X, .22, Tix 2, that's T-O. It's very confusing.
I was like going like, what's that?
It's a terrible
URL.
Yeah,
no, we're doing a very best of tour, so right. We're doing the arenas in September.
Yeah, Tix.2/Texas. Just look for Texas tickets. Anyway, here's Save the Last Dance from Muscle Shoals.
Every dance with the guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. You can smile. Every smile.
I'm running out of goosebumps.
Well, you will run out of goosebumps when you hear the story of that actual song, because when we did the song, Spooner said, oh, he just started, because I never like to know what a song's about when the writer that wrote it, and he says, oh yeah, you know, one of the guys that wrote the song, he says he was in a wheelchair, he said, and he wrote this song for his wife because he was at a wedding and she was dancing with another man, and he says, no, go and dance, and she was dancing with another man, but he always knew. Oh, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to go. But it was just like so, it was just like, literally, it was like he knew that he would always have the last dance with her. It's so sad, isn't it?
And beautiful.
Yeah.
Sad and beautiful at the same time. Wow. Don't often see you like this.
I know, I don't often see you like that. I'm literally like... But you know when someone tells you, you know when someone tells you a really beautiful story, and you were just like, I said to Spooner, thank God you never told me that before I sang it. I would have just lost it. I'd have been like, ooh, ooh, ooh. But as well, when we did this, it was like, you know, I'd said to Spooner after we did it, I went, oh my God, that I got really excited about that. I said, because it's kind of had that Linda Ronstadt thing. And he went, baby, you don't need Linda. You just sang it yourself. I was like, wow. Oh. But he was like, Spooner was just like, you know, I just love him. He was just like so cool. And you walk around town with him, like we went and bought guitars and everything. And Jordy and I went to the guitar shop and did all this stuff. And everybody's like, Spooner, Spooner, Spooner. And you're just like going like, you literally is like, and there was amazing things like when we were in the studio, because when you're in Fame Studios, you've got to remember that this is a studio that you've seen in a million.
Well, just
podcasts.
Tell us a bit about Fame Studios if you don't mind.
It's just, so Fame is like, I mean, like, there's been so many great records made there. It's like, it's notoriously, but it's never changed. I mean, it's literally got like a bit of 10-inch shagpile carpet in it. It's all wood. It just smells of music and musicians and great records and people that have been there. But every day at 1 o'clock, you let they do a walkthrough with the public. So that's how like studios now have to survive, is like they literally need to do like tours and everything, like even your Abbey Roads, everything. They have to like think out of the box to survive because we don't make records the way we used to. And, you know, it's really important to still have these studios because we do need them for certain things. And basically, you would sit there every day eating a sandwich and a cup of tea, and like people would come through and they'd be like pointing at us, going, "Oh my God, there's real musicians!" Like, and you suddenly remembered, like, you know, you just have that thing of like, God, that is what we do. We make music for a living. It's like insane.
It's the best job.
It's just insane. It's like, it's just mad. You think, because then you suddenly become part of the history of that studio,
yeah.
And it's like, we made a record there, so it's like, it's just really special. And
it's
really
like going to Universal Studios tour and you go on a day where they're making a movie and they really are making
exactly,
a movie.
And, you're like, and then you see the movie and you go, I saw yeah, that I saw getting that. Made. I saw them doing that. It's
what
like
I love
really...
about this whole story about this album and you and Johnny and the band is that it's re-excited you to the point where you went to the guitar shop and started buying guitars. Because that's a reawakening of your excitement about music, isn't it?
You just, you know, you do. It was like, you know, we sat, as I said, it was literally, because people go, "Oh, how did you prepare for this record? How you did it?" The honest truth was, is we walked into the studio that day and Spooner sat on the piano and I sat on the piano stool beside him and tapped out the timing on his leg, literally, and would point at certain bits. And fun enough, what was really interesting is you'll notice that, well, you might not notice, but Inner Smile is not on this album.
Right.
And Inner Smile is one of our biggest songs. And it was funny because when we came round to doing Inner Smile, Spooner was like, "Nah." And we were like, and I'm not kidding you, the best bit was is that we just saw the colour draining for a record company guy's face going, "This is one of the biggest songs and I'm going to have to go back and say it's not on the album." And we were like, "Oh, Spooner doesn't know what he does." And we were like, "Why don't you want to do it?" And he went, "I don't do that Louis schnizzle." He went, "This song's not for me." Which for us meant, oh my God, he really wants to do everything else. But the record company were just going, "He's not doing Inner Smile."
Yeah, you
know,
yeah,
it was
yeah.
like, so it was, you know, and we thought, he's doing this because he wants to do it. He really wants to be part of
this. And that
was
the vibe.
Yeah, and he sent Johnny and I a lovely email the other night just saying how much he loves the record and stuff. And he's, you know, he's just a cool dude. He still tours with Neil Young right now.
Yeah.
He goes out on the road.
I mean, you mentioned some of the people he's worked with, Aretha Franklin, Neil Young, Sheryl Crow, Linda Ronstadt. The list goes on. Amazing, amazing, amazing. When you went to the guitar shop, right?
Yeah.
What did you buy?
We bought a Martin.
Right.
A really old Martin acoustic. Which
and were you
is,
in the mood where you just had to buy something? Do you know what I mean?
The problem is there was loads of stuff. So we're just thinking, what can we take that you can take on your hand luggage? Because when you're carrying guitars and you're carrying really old guitars, you do not want to put them in the hold because
yeah, yeah.
we've lost so many guitars that way. Not because they get lost, just because they get smashed. And it's such a shame to do that. And, you know, what you got to remember is when they go into the cold, the wood, because it gets so cold,
they just
split.
Once they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've lost a piece of history. You know, someone, like, made that beautiful guitar.
How big is it? How many guitar shops are around there?
Oh, it's Alabama. You know, it's like, come on. It's like there's not much else apart from like
honestly,
there's not much else for the, apart from you know guitar shops, sandwich shops.
I just
and
wouldn't come
chemists.
Back. If I were you, I mean, we have to come here to do the show because this is where the state radio station is, and I do love coming here. It's great vibe and it's great energy. But if I had a job, if I was an artist or a writer or something like that, I'd go to my favorite place in the world, and I'd just do it there.
Yeah, I mean, it was really beautiful, like. Just to be there, especially with him, because you know Spooner is from Muscle Shoals. That's where he was born, where he grew up. Funnily enough, he was like, do you know, his actual real name is Dewey, which I love that name as well. But because he's like, oh yeah, I get called Spooner when I was a kid, and the nickname was like, why? And he says, oh, because I was playing with Spoon at dinner. He says, and the spoon shot up and hit me in the eye. He's blind in one eye. His
What's
eye.
That
he's like, and he get called Spooner ever since then. That's what happened.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And it's like, and the thing is, Spooner doesn't tell you all these stories. You really need to press them. Like, yes, yeah, what was it like working with Aretha and stuff like this? And he'll be like, oh, I remember when we were doing, you know. This song or that song, whatever he says, and they were working out the backing vocals, and they were Aretha and her sister were messing around with ideas of why they were going to do the back vocals, and suddenly they were going, suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me, suck it to me, like taking the mickey. And they were like, oh no, you should keep that bit, it's really good. Like, because they were like going, what you want, like doing all that. And they were going, suck it to me, suck it, like singing along with it. And suddenly, like, they're like, yeah, let's put that in the record. And he's telling you all this, and you're just like going, you know, it's like being in a sweet shop for us. We're just going,
no, I know,
we're going, oh, tell us more.
And you've got your own version. I mean, you now have that version of A Story because, your experience with Spoon is his experience with Aretha. Of course it is. You know, and it's like a relay race and you pay it forward and you pass it on. From all the things you've been fortunate enough to experience, where does this rank, do you think?
It's pretty special. You know, making records is pretty special, because making any record is really special because there's not a lot of people that get the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And it's something that is there. It can't be erased. It's there. You've made it. It's there forever.
Yeah.
You'll be gone. You'll be gone for years after. Like the people that still listen to the music, and that person is alive because they've left this, you know, this behind. It's like extraordinary. It's an extraordinary like catalogue of what you do. You know, you've left a mark.
I wonder if that's what you have in common, because we had Brian Cox in here the other day. And
I love Brian.
He was with Daryl McCormick, wasn't he? And they're in this new, they're in the Great American Play together. And they're rehearsing for it. They were the most two tired people we've ever had in the studio, because they were in the middle of previews and rehearsing in the day, and the play's 3.5 hours long.
Oh my God.
And it's a Eugene O'Neill play from 1939, based in 1912. They brought the weight of the responsibility in the studio with them. But I was talking to them about actors, you know actors really well. Obviously, I was married to Billy, and I said, actors, when they meet, they have this different connection, and anybody else who's in the room realises that you're not an actor, because those two are, and they're having this sort of tacit conversation.
It's like it's just a language, yeah. That it's like it's an exchange of, you know, it's just an exchange of an understanding of the dream of what it is you do. You know, you just, it's like, you know, musicians and songwriters, we're just like, We were most of us little geeky person at school that nobody really sort of cared about, and you know it's that geekiness that then transcends into being able to, like, maybe you're not able to express yourself in a certain way or do, you know, speak in a certain way, and suddenly it's like, you know, forever when I was at school, every report card that my mum ever got was, Charlene has no understanding of language. I'm like, I'm a songwriter. That's what I do. You know, so maybe it was really good that I had no understanding of language, because then I sort of formed this own little language in my head that became songwriting. So, yeah, there's that understanding of that geekiness.
But also what I was going to say is the fact that, how judgmental is that, by the way? It's just not your language, teacher. There are many other languages. But I think what I've realised just talking to you today for the first time is that maybe it's because, you know, and I could be wrong, you know, and your fellow musicians know, and actors know, and their fellow actors know, and writers know, and their fellow writers know, and artists know, and their fellow artists know, that we are only here, everything is temporary, apart from things that you produce and will be here after you're gone.
The left.
And so you have that about you, whereas we're all panicking. You know, we don't really know. There's nothing for us to leave. But you know, you have this sort of, there is a permanence to your...
Yeah, there is, but you don't know you're doing that when you're doing it.
No, I know.
Which is great. So maybe there's the understanding of, I think as well, there's an understanding of knowing what it's taken to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that, with everything, but that's like everything. That's not just with songwriters or actors or, you know, people like that. I think there's an, when people do certain things, there's an understanding of what it took to get to that point. And that, I think that's sometimes what people connect on. Because, you know, it's like you connect with different people. A lot of people that, you know, what the sacrifices have been. You know, when there's been giant sacrifices made to continue to do what it is you do, which is really important. You know, it's like when you play live, it's like, does it look... I remember having a conversation with my best friend's son. And it was like, yeah, does it look easy when we go on stage? And he's like, yeah. And I says, do you know how how much that takes to make it look like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like literally anything could happen, and I'm like a wind-up doll. I just keep going. You know, we just keep going. And that's what gives you the freedom when you do play live, that when you're on the stage, that suddenly you can enjoy the audience. You can play with the audience, because everything else that's happening round about it is so stamped into you. It's just totally, you just can do it on automatic.
Yeah.
So everything else that goes with the show is then you get to play around it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's so good about it.
It's been a great couple of years for you, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, really playing Glastonbury last year really made everybody kind of sit up and go, oh, wait a minute here. Texas R. I think... Yeah, it was that moment, and it was
you
a bit.
For
I nearly
it.
Said it because I did get
freaking great.
I did get the warning before I walked in, and I went, that could be hard not to swear. But but it is that thing where people are like, I literally came at a restaurant last night, and a woman's like to me, "Oh my God, saw you on Glastonbury." But it's great. I mean, the fact that this tour, you know, we're playing the London O2 in September, we're playing two hydros in Glasgow.
Yeah.
I mean, we're playing a lot of people in September, and we're playing Cardiff and Leeds, Liverpool. I'm looking at the list here. Bournemouth, it's Birmingham. It's like in all arenas. And, you know, the last load of years that we've been hammering it has kind of got us to this point in these arenas and playing these. So please come and see us.
Yeah, no, tickets to go and see Texas Live, why wouldn't you? tix.to/Texas. That's tix.to/Texas. Get out there, go and see Charlene and the band, and just have a fantastic... You won't have a better night. You'll have as good a night maybe watching other bands, but you'll never have a better night, especially now. I think the Glastonbury gig, it did something for you as well,
It really did.
How would you describe what it did for you?
I mean, I think people could see how emotional it was on stage. I mean, I don't know if I'm just to that age where I get... I'm just like... Ugh! But it was like the love that came off the audience, because when we went... I remember before we went on stage, I'm thinking, okay, right, we're playing and we're in amongst... You know, we're in amongst the Foo Fighters, Royal Blood, and, you know, with Alex. It was just literally like, how do we fit in? Because it's quite... indie and blokey, so how are we going to go down in amongst this audience? Because we knew that like a lot of people would have been getting ready to come see this, and we went on, and I thought, you know, they don't even know that they know the Texas songs yet, because it was young. I was like, they don't know. And then when we went on, I mean, they sang from beginning to end. I was literally the force that came off that audience was insane.
You have been different ever since that gig.
Just what? Happier,
yeah. Well,
it gives you that.
It's a stamp of not of approval, but
it was like you were talking about awards.
Yeah.
Earlier, like before we went on air there, and the thing is that it's like it's not about the awards, but it's about that recognition of what you've and that was a recognition for us of, you know, we have done. It's been 35 years, and you know, there's not many bands, and certainly not many female fronted bands that have literally stayed a lot around that length of time.
I think we know what's coming next. Open that door, everybody! A control room, everything.
Oh. I was literally, who's here?
Da 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 da. Da.
For those of a certain age that know that tune.
We're way over time. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation. I could talk to
it's
you literally
been great.
Forever. You are in. You've always been in flow, but you're in a different level of flow, I think, nowadays. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's great to see you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Over to you, Vassos.
Our next guests are two brothers who we're happy to say have basically taken over. From your favourite telly to your favourite music to your favourite books, The Ghost Theatre is out tomorrow in paperback. So please welcome the brothers, Anything But Grimm. It's Matt and Richard Osman.
Yeah, we've got the Osmans on the show. We actually have the Osmans.
How about that? Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Very, very well.
Yeah, very well.
All right. So what was in the water when you two were born that you can both write books so well? Let's talk to the man who is the author of The Ghost Theatre, which is the main subject of this interview. Matt, first of all.
I've no idea. I mean, my mum was a teacher, so there were always kind of like books in the house. And I think there was that kind of thing that...
It was mainly Jackie Collins, though.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that's
yeah, great writer.
That's
yeah,
great
yeah.
stuff.
Good page-turner.
There was
yeah,
kind of like storytelling, you know, yeah. and Harold Robbins and stuff and all those kind of things. But I think it's just taking books seriously, isn't it? That's the thing, that it's an important thing to do.
Yeah, but if you take them too seriously, you know, as a kid, you disengage with them. So there's a fine line, isn't there?
Yeah, but I always loved things like kind of like Sherlock Holmes yeah. and stuff like that, quite adventure story yeah. kind of things.
All right. Now, obviously, Rich, you've done all right in the book writing world thus far. You know, jury's still out, but it's looking good, isn't it?
Just promised.
What about this, your brother's
oh,
book?
Oh, my goodness.
It couldn't be more different from yours.
It's so brilliant. Well, it couldn't be more different, but I tell you, the way in which it's similar is you just cannot stop turning the pages. It's so brilliant. It's the writing is extraordinary. It's so lyrical. It's about Shakespearean London, but in, you know, there's all sorts of chase sequences, all sorts of stuff going on. The writing is so beautiful, but you have to keep turning the pages. I think it's a work of absolute genuine genius.
All right, I do realise it is an interview. At some point, we have to ask Matt a question, but we could just lord over him and drool over him a bit longer.
I'm fine with this. Okay, compliment me for a little bit.
He's got a cup of tea.
Yeah, leave this to Rich and I. I mean, I did say, you know, I'm not the biggest non-fiction fan in the world. I'm really not. But I do adore Charles Dickens and I do adore Oscar Wilde. So it's a different, it's a certain flavour. And I said earlier on the show, and I really mean it, Rich, it's like Charles Dickens suddenly came back from the dead and wrote another book. That's what it feels like to me. What do you think?
Isn't it? I think exactly that. All the way through, you're taken into a world. You feel like you are in Elizabethan London. You've got these incredible characters. You've got these incredible ideas. And, you know, there's like a whole new religion that's been invented, and there's, you know, people running across the rooftops and this extraordinary theatre troupe of people, and you're immersed completely in this world and in these characters. So you're, and the way he describes the sights and the sounds and the smells of a place, it's just, I just think it's completely, it transports you.
Yeah, and we haven't even said what the book's about yet. the opening, like 20 pages, like a pre-Tartar's James Bond scene.
Yeah, I thought it was Mission Impossible in Elizabethan London.
I'm so stealing that. That's absolutely great.
Well, you don't need to steal it.
If we could get it on the back of the cover, that'd be great.
Have you seen what people are saying about the book? All the reviews are in. Like, they're off the chain. And I know it's your second novel, it's not your first. But when I read a Dickens novel or an Oscar Wilde novel, you know, you look at a paragraph, you know this, Rich. You read a paragraph and you have to stop. I have to stop because of the wonder of the paragraph. And it's got the description in, but it has movement in. Because it's not florid, it's fluid. It's different, isn't it?
Exactly.
And that's what this book's like. Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get how you've done it. I don't even know if you wrote it. I don't know if you you bought an old Dickens novel that was unpublished.
I just changed the names.
Frame the book. Frame the story, please.
It's about two child actors in Elizabethan London, which was a big thing. The most famous people in Elizabethan London who weren't kind of royal were actors. Everyone went to the theatre. It was the huge thing. And the poshest and most interesting theatres had child actors from about 8 to about 14. And they put on these incredible, quite sexual, quite political plays, and everyone went to see them. And I was fascinated by these kids who were incredibly famous, but basically slaves.
Yeah.
You know, they were bought and sold.
And some posh kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, to do the plays, you had to be pretty.
Yeah.
If you knew some Latin, that helped.
Yeah, or could read, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they had to learn, like, 20 plays a year. So they were stealing posh kids off the street. They actually had a... You can still see it in the records office in Kew, a little sign from Queen Elizabeth to, allowing this guy, Henry Evans, to take kids off the street, to press gang them. They were that important.
Yeah.
And it's the story of two child actors who fall in love and create this kind of punk theatre troupe that foments rebellion in the streets of London.
And the theatre troupes and the theatre companies themselves were punk anyway, because they sort of had to be. So, for example, you know, there's one point in the first few chapters of the book where a new play is delivered in the morning and it has to be performed in the evening.
Oh, yeah, that's completely true. That kind of thing happened, that they were expected to know all of this stuff. And it was quite rough and ready, and people would get up on stage and there was singing and dancing and all kinds of things. It was quite raucous, you know, working-class entertainment at the time.
So Nonsuch is one of the two, and Shay is the girl,
yes,
slash dressed as a boy, because that happened a lot as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
And so Nonsuch, you don't know who Nonsuch is, first of all, but he obviously is extremely charismatic. It turns out that he's the superstar of this particular theatre, not the Ghost Theatre yet. And Shay is educated to a point by her dad, who's now a boatman on the Thames. He's blind and the mum's no longer there and all this kind of stuff goes on. And so she finds herself in the pit because she wants to watch Nonsuch perform, because she didn't realise till a minute before the performance that he's a player. And then there's no seats left, so she's given a tuppence a day job as the prompter. And so she's got this amazing POV of something she's never seen before. And so this is her witnessing Nonsuch in the second act. And this is the brilliant Matt Osman's writing. There was a weight to his words, this is Nonsuch, that she'd not noticed earlier. His voice was a blade returning to a sheath, a pigeon coming home to roost. And his power was double trebled even by Alouette's lighting. Her lanterns were mirrored and directional, throwing beams of light that always caught Nonsuch's face. She could dim and brighten, flattening his features and throwing him into the shadows. She played with the light the way Nonsuch played with words, and the two of them warped the very air to their bidding. I mean, come on. And every paragraph's like that, isn't it?
I wish I hadn't read it now, because I'd like to read it.
How great is this book, Rich?
Yeah, I think it's terrific. Well, do you know what? Honestly, the thing that matters more to me, and it's brilliant, Matt's always been brilliant, everything he's ever done, but I love the fact that it's incredibly entertaining as well. You know, some writers who have these descriptive powers...
They just get lost in it.
They get lost in it, and Matt never loses sight of the story at any point.
It's amazing.
Look, you sitting there reading. That's good radio.
I don't care. I think it is good radio.
I agree.
Right, so we're in the middle. So she gets one night, first night we meet her dad, and she's in her dad's boat, and there are these three rapscallions who've been out gaming, and if they get in the boat, terrible things might happen. So they ward them off, and she gets in the boat with her dad, and they go downriver.
Yes.
Downriver to Birdland. What the heck is Birdland? What is this sect called? What is this area of London called? What is this sort of Dickensian, pre-Dickensian, Shakespearean Las Vegas sphere called? And what happens there?
It's a thing called Birdland. And the main character, Shay, is an avis Coulton, who is a bird worshipper. And they live in these huge nets outside of London. Right. Where they bring down birds and they feed them because they worship them.
Yeah.
Which just came from a conversation I was having with someone, which was, why has there never been a bird-worshipping religion?
Yeah.
It seems, if you're going to... I'm not a religious person. And if I was going to worship something, it wouldn't be a guy in the sky with a beard. Birds seem...
It would be a budgerigar.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, perhaps an eagle. There's something about birds, you know what I mean? They're unknowable and they're beautiful and they live in the heavens. So I wanted to make up a religion, you know. It's an ego thing.
Yeah, so come more because it's better than how you're describing it. Come on, you're the man. You're the man here. You're so much like you're embarrassed about your own genius. There's a world. There is this worshipping of the birds to the extent that the first time we meet Shay, she's freeing birds.
Yes,
she's going around London, and this is why she's being chased in the opening scene, as it were.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
I write a lot about she trains a hawk. And I've always been fascinated in the kind of connection between people and animals. You know, there's bears and stuff in this as well. But I wanted to write about magic and the things that feel like magic to me. And those things are the theatre and music and performance and worship, all these kind of things that sit outside our normal everyday experience. And yeah, with Birdland, it was just kind of, I don't know, a mental experiment. If you worship birds, what would it look like? Who would your gods be?
And what would you sing about? She's not the conductor of the murmuration that can happen and people can go and see it. But you can get why a murmuration of starlings or whatever could become sort of the widescreen entertainment of its day if you knew it was going to happen. If you could sell tickets for it, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, totally. And they're beautiful. You know, I've been to see them. Kind of Brighton, actually, is really good for murmuration. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because, like, people pay like millions of pounds for a framed picture that doesn't move at auction.
Yeah,
every night, especially this time of the year, you got the sunset and you got the sunrise every morning. And we just don't bother. Why are we not astounded? But I say, don't I, Vassos, every time I see a hedgehog, I just have to just pause for a minute and go, how amazing is a hedgehog? Do you know what I mean? What is wrong with us?
I had a friend from Spain who saw a picture of a badger.
Yeah.
And she was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, it's a badger. You get them in the hedgerows here. And she was like, why are you not out looking for them all the time? What is this thing?
Badgers. By the way, you know when you're hectoring someone, why can you also badger them? Why do badgers get the rap when you're giving somebody a hard time?
That's a good point.
Because badgers never give anybody a hard time, do they?
Other badgers.
Aren't they quite communal?
They are, but you know, there's beef. There's badger beef. Sure. I mean, come on, that's my new Netflix show. Badger beef.
I like that you're setting yourself up as a badger expert. Yeah, I've never heard you talk about badgers before in your life. And so, of course. Very communal,
Would be shocked if no two badgers have ever had some sort of row. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm sure they're very peaceable creatures.
So do you think badgers hector then?
Yeah.
And Hector's badger.
Hector's house. That was a show and a half. All right. I've read 100 pages, right?
Okay. It goes downhill from there.
I bet it doesn't. But it's this book is stunning. What else can we say, Rich, to get people to buy this book?
I will just say this, which it's if you're starting a train journey, if you're starting a plane journey, anything like that, if you've got a couple of hours to spare, if you read the first page, by all means put it down if you don't like it. But you will read the second page, then you read the third. It's just one of those books that absolutely captivates you and takes you into a brand new world. And I love writing about the world as it is now. That's the thing I feel that I have in my power, to talk about the world around us. I cannot imagine the feats of creative imagination that go into inventing an entirely new world that's real but feels fantastical.
But then you can make stuff up. That's the great thing.
I make stuff up anyway.
No, you can make stuff up. It's different, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, how come this is only your second book and you've been in this, you're in a band as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
You see the band called Suede, apparently. So you've been doing that for ages and you've always, have you always had been hiding this under a bush or somewhere?
Did
you know you could do this stuff?
I don't know why I didn't do it earlier, because I spend so much of my life in hotel rooms and on planes and in buses and stuff.
Yeah.
And nowadays, all I do is write. That's what I do. You know, I sit on planes, I sit in hotel rooms.
Don't tell the rest of the band that, because you're going on tour soon, aren't you?
Yeah, but I write when we're touring.
I don't think it's a secret.
Because there's nothing, it's that Keith Richards thing, you know, like 5 years working, 20 years hanging around.
Yeah, hurry up and wait.
I wish I'd started 20 years ago, you know.
Well, maybe it just wasn't right. Maybe the time wasn't right. I can't remember the first. Did you come on and talk about the first book? You came on the show to talk about something.
No, I came on with Brett talking about the, I think, the Manix gigs that we're doing in the summer.
Oh, yeah. Because you always double... Why are you here? It's just out of interest.
Do you know what? I have no idea, but I'm delighted to be here. mainly as a cheerleader for a book that I absolutely adore, and which I hope everyone will go and buy.
Because I was saying, I'm not being funny, but by the way, it's always nice to see you. You know that, and I know you're about to catch up on Fulham and all this kind of stuff. But I was just thinking, are you just coming in to say how great this book is? And I think you are, aren't you?
Of course I am. Yeah, 100% I am.
This is a brilliant idea. I'm going to just bring you with me all the time, just in the background.
Yeah, a couple of times we've done like live events, the two of us, and talking about books. And it's such a joy because we're such different writers, but we come from the same place.
Yeah.
And we both write, and that's, you know, we both find that very difficult. We both started writing at the same time. But, you know, people who come to see it, there's everyone likes one of us.
Isn't it interesting? Right. So let's go to the. I don't know which the side hustle is now. To be honest, your side hustle used to be writing, and it's not anymore. And your side hustle is everything else. But if you think about your lane where you came from, if you forgive that expression, so you come from world of TV formats, which is very mechanical and very methodical and very mathematical, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you come from the world of music, which can be mathematical, of course, as well, to do with fretboards and keys and this kind of other stuff and staves and semitones and tones and all that kind of wonderful thing. But it's more ethereal. And your book is more musical, and your books are more game, not game show, but
no,
more
I agree.
Formatted.
Yeah, cliffhangers, what's going to happen
that's
next.
That's where we are, isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly that. And, you know, and that's not because I worked in television, it's not because Matt worked in music, but I went into television because that's how my brain works, that boom, 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 entertain, keep people reading. Matt went into music because that's how his mind works, which is passion and expressing yourself and trying to bring beauty out of chaos. And that's how the books read, I think.
Yeah, there is a lot of cosmos in this chaos. In fact, it's all cosmos with, you know, because you can only really be I think you can only be genuinely spontaneous. And I got this wrong for years, clearly. I think you can only be genuinely spontaneous if you actually have a massive foundation of stability. Because if you don't, it's not spontaneity. It is actually just chaos.
Yeah, you've always got to have somewhere to go back to. You've always got to have a little cave to go back to. You never need to go back there.
Or a big cave.
It's like, you know, a boat is safe in port, but boats are not made to be in port.
There's a brilliant, brilliant quote from David Bowie, who said when he's making a record, he likes to be far in the water, far enough away from the land that his feet aren't touching the bottom, but he can still see the shore.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. You want to be a little bit out of your depth, but not kind of drowning.
I'm like that. I always think I'm happy to be out of my comfort zone, but I still want to be able to attach to my comfort zone's Wi-Fi. That's where I like to be.
Well, it's the difference between being within your grasp and beyond your reach.
Yeah,
you just want to be slightly beyond your reach, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, we could talk more about it. We don't need to. Just buy The Ghost Theatre, Matt Osman, and tell me it's not great. So it's out as a paperback straight off the bat.
No. It's been out in hardback for kind of months. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry,
forgive
me.
It's out in paperback tomorrow.
All right, well, it's great. All right, what's going on music? You are on tour soon, big gigs.
We're doing a whole load of shows with the Manic Street Preachers.
Yeah, which is what you came in to talk about.
Which are going to be great, you know, kind of like Cardiff Castle, the Eden Project, Alexander.
They're all sold out, aren't they, I presume?
One's left, the Margate Dreamland one. Come on, Kent.
Margate. Yeah. What's wrong with Margate?
Yeah. We did add it late. And
it's back on the map, Margate, now, isn't it? Tracy Emin's down there and all that stuff.
And we're doing a big show August the 1st, Audley End in Essex, with Johnny Marr supporting.
Yeah, I've seen that came
and Nadine
today,
Shah. So,
all right, great. And Rich, you're doing something different soon, aren't you?
Well, I've got the new book coming out, which is not a Thursday Murder Club book. That'll be out in September. But then I'll be back to Thursday Murder Club after that. But we've got the Thursday Murder Club film shooting this summer.
No, something else is going on. I'm doing a gameplay thing.
A gameplay thing.
We're doing a podcast.
Oh, Badger Beef.
No,
that's Badger Beef's six
Jay,
series.
What's the thing that we were discussing, Richard's having a load of fun doing?
Podcast?
Yeah. There's something that he's forgotten about that we know about. New book spin option for Netflix. Yeah, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah,
yakety,
blah,
yak, yeah, yak, yak. Aren't you? I thought you were doing this like sort of community collective thing where you can.
I wonder who you're thinking of.
No. It's definitely.
You should do it. I mean, it sounds interesting.
Aren't you bringing the Murder Club to life or something?
Am I bringing the Murder Club to life?
Like the Thursday Murder Club.
Are you accusing him of being a murderer, basically? Is that what you're saying?
Are you accusing me of teaming up with a series of pensioners and solving crime?
I thought you were doing a mass gameplay Thursday Murder Club.
This might be a fever dream. It sounds like it's interesting.
I wandered off into his world of fiction.
It's interesting because I wonder who now owns
this
idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Who owns this idea?
You should do it, basically.
I haven't got time. Stop. Everybody said to me, you should do this, you should do that. I don't have time to do anything anymore because I'm just doing everything I should be doing properly. And if you do everything you should do properly, then you haven't got time for anything that you shouldn't
exactly
be doing.
Exactly that. Mm. You've got to give everything else up. That's the point.
Yeah,
you've got to find
nice,
the thing that you love and let everything else fall
by the
wayside.
You don't give stuff up. It just falls to the side.
Exactly.
It's great. No need for pointy elbows. It's great to see you, man. I'm so chuffed that I know you a bit.
Oh, thank you. That's very, very kind.
And it's always great to see Rich.
Yeah.
I'm
chuffed I know him a bit as well.
It's great to see you come. It's like, do you remember an Opportunity Knocks where they used to have the nominee first?
Yes.
Nominated.
Yes,
the sponsor.
Yes.
And Hugh Green would welcome the sponsor to the sofa.
Exactly.
And then and by the way, you wouldn't know this person either. This person would be a member of the public. So it's like a double intro, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what we've done today.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah. And listen, I'm aware I am slightly biased, but I would not be letting anyone down. If you buy that book, you will get your money's worth.
Just
Richard will pay you back if you don't like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's do that.
Up to a point.
Yeah, up to a point.
Up to three people.
Yeah.
Yeah. The well is deep, but not infinite. From a sibling's point of view, we've got a parent. Kate Silverton's on tomorrow talking about parenting. Clearly, your mum didn't do the worst job in the world.
Yeah.
You're both doing pretty well. You both give us to the world and not take us. You have a purpose. You have a service. You leave every situation or most situations better. Because you are in them, but also you get extraordinarily well as brothers. Can you give the rest of us, mums and dads, any handy hints as to how that may have happened?
Well, I think all my mum really did was leave us alone, is the truth. You know, kids these days, and they're kind of, oh, you've got to do piano lessons or French lessons, or you've got to, and you know, she just, you know, she worked out that Matt liked music, she worked out that I liked watching telly and writing stuff, and she just let us do it, I think, and she loved us, and she never pushed us, wow. She never told us to go to university. Well, she loved Matt more than she loves me, because he's the oldest.
Right.
But yeah, she was very, very hands off, apart from where love is concerned.
You say that, but maybe there's a bit of Jedi stuff going on.
Oh, 100%.
So what was the Jedi stuff we need to know?
Well, no, my mum thinks she's a genius. So she's like, she would do the thing of course you don't need to go to university. Of course you mustn't do. And we think, oh my God, you'd lose your mind if we didn't go to university. We'll be the first generation in this family ever to go to university. And you would absolutely, would kill you if we didn't. But she'd always go, oh no, you mustn't worry. You can just, why don't you go out and get a job? Why don't you go and work in Iceland? You think, I know what you're up to, old woman. I know what's going on here. But by and large, I think she just liked us and was interested in us.
You exactly how well you do working in Iceland, basically.
Exactly.
And do you concur with everything Richard's just said?
Yeah, totally. I think the thing is that your kids are never going to do what you want them to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's pointless kind of forcing them into something. And Ricky's totally right. She just let us be, and we found our own passions, you know what I mean? We found the things that we wanted. And I think she was bemused by most of it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? I think it was fantastic when Ricky wrote a book because she could talk to her friends about that.
Right.
She couldn't really play them suede.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or pointless.
Yeah, when we did TV and music, she was proud, but yeah, she was like, when, as soon as we were authors...
She couldn't own it, though.
She's like, oh, my boys, oh, didn't I do a good job?
She immediately took over the book club, didn't she? Yeah. There was a kind of a putsch.
That is funny, man. Great to see you both. Thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to say before we finish chatting?
No, come and see Suede over the summer. The shows are going to be amazing.
Absolutely.
Buy the book.
Can I recommend the book?
Yeah.
Ghost Theatre, Matt Osman.
Hey! All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Great to see you both. Good fun, this, man.
Thanks, Chris.
Great fun. All right.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.